Welcome to the latest Editor's Podcast with me, Simone Kyriakou, editor of FT Advisor. In this series for 2024, I'll be in conversation with people with expertise that sits outside of UK financial services, but whose work and research can have great lessons for advice businesses and wider financial services companies. The topic for today's podcast is artificial intelligence, two words one can hardly escape hearing or reading, it seems. But the speed at which this so-called fifth industrial revolution is taking place is making it impossible to ignore. There are multiple opportunities for businesses who learn to harness and adopt AI. There are also multiple challenges. There are dangers in not exploring how AI and machine learning can help businesses and improve systems and security, and dangers in getting it wrong. But unless we think about the possibilities and explore the application of AI to our business, we'll be left behind like a spinning jenny. Today, I am joined by tech enthusiast Dr. Christian Westermann. He worked at NASA and on the ESA space missions in the 1990s, building satellite-based instruments, working on signal detection, and trying to understand the origin of our solar system with the use of physics, data, and modelling. He also worked as a consultant with large companies on their journey towards technology and AI-driven innovation in financial services, healthcare, pharma, and industrial manufacturing. Dr. Westermann is now group head of AI, and his mission at Zurich is to drive the AI journey in the most significant business areas of the company. Welcome to the podcast, Christian.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. Thank you. I'd like to ask a little bit about your background at the ESA and NASA in the 90s, and then what prompted the move into insurance?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, my background is in physics and in space research. And as you said, I was working for ESA mission and for NASA space mission. So really, you know, which by the end of the day, you send some instruments out there in the solar system. You do some measurements for the one purpose to find out where we're coming from. What is the origin of the solar system? But at some point in time, you know, after also all those missions, you know, you also want to make a living, right? And as a young physicist in the 90s, And please think back on the 90s, right? I mean, Google was just there in 1998. The iPhone was not even there. It only came out in 2008. The natural move from a physicist was to go to computer, to work as a computer scientist in software engineering and the like. And that's basically where then my professional career started. So I spent multiple years as software engineer. And before I then joined as a tech consultant, a large consulting firm, and where I for the first time got in touch with really large multinationals, right? Starting from 2010, I could then focus on the data / analytics topic, which then turned in 2014 into an AI topic. And since there, I've been working with multinationals on AI, bringing more of AI to, you know, to large banks, pharma companies, as you were alluding. And then it was just a natural step for me to at some point switch this role from a consultant to an in-house role, right? And Zurich gave a great opportunity, right? A great opportunity where this position was open and where I could really join this company. And, you know, not to give already the end of the story, an insurance company is a really great place to work in AI, because from a pure AI point of view, you will find everything that you need.
Yes, absolutely. And we have spoken many times before on FT Advisor with Zurich and other insurance companies about the importance of gathering data, analysing data, using the good data to harness better, you know, customer journeys or to do things better. Did you find the shift from understanding the origins of space then quite easy in terms of that data capture into the insurance space? Because they do seem literally worlds apart.
You know, you have the same core things you need to solve. Even if you build space instruments, you have budget constraints in terms of the size of an instrument, of the quality you would like expect from the measurements, the data you would like to connect, and what you basically by the end of the day you would like to find out about the universe. And a very similar thing you have when you work on the AI world, right? In a real world scenario, you have a limited budget and you would like to improve something along your value chain, right? And you have given people, you have a given budget and a given timeline, and under very similar conditions, you try to do the best on asset to improve along the value chain. So the types of working are very similar, right? There is one big difference. when you work in space science, the planets and comets, they're not waiting for you. So a deadline is really a deadline. So when the projects tell you you need to deliver by that date, you rather make sure that you can deliver by that date.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas I think advisors are a little bit more patient. They are prepared to wait a little, just a little bit longer. Can we then talk about, you mentioned that Google obviously is starting its nascency in the late 1990s. Can you talk a little bit about the pace of technological change and why people are now calling this now in 2020s the sort of the start of the fifth industrial revolution?
I mean, we have all observed the pace in technology over the past 20 years. As I said, first driven by Google, by those new tech giants, right? Big tech, then followed by Apple, you know, with the iPhones and everything so on. And then followed again by the move to cloud and the hyperscalers. So we have all been followers and observers of what's happening. Even AI, when you think back of IBM, who had a big push in the 2010s, I believe, with IBM Watson, which basically for the first time, and I remember as a consultant, for the first time, AI became a topic, even when you were consulting. So you started to talk with some large companies about AI and how that could really impact what they do towards their customers or towards other activities they have. However, why do they call it a fifth revolution? What is now the really new thing? I mean, with thanks to companies like OpenAI, that should not be a advertisement for OpenAI. But we had IBM did some first announcements in the 2010s, 12s with IBM Watson. Now we face something similar with OpenAI, who talked about ChatGPT and who gave access to AI to everybody. And I think that is the big shift which happened in the past years. AI was made by specialists for specialists, and you had to do a lot of convincing to get something done, you know, in an industry, in a company. And now with ChatGPT, where everybody have access, even senior management have access to that, everybody can explore and everybody can slowly start to understand, oh, I believe this time that technology could even impact my business. And that is the current change that we see.
Absolutely. And there's no business that's exempt from it. You know, I was speaking to someone who said, you know, obviously, Simony, as a journalist, you'll know that AI is important. And yes, we're sort of looking at it, how we can use it. We're not employing it yet in anything that we're publishing, but we're looking behind the scenes. We've got working spaces. We're talking about it. We're developing it. We're going on training courses. It's quite fun to sort of learn how to use some of these tools. And I said, but what about agriculture? What about farming? And he says, you can just get these big sort of hydroponic buildings with automatically sort of feeding, and, you know, AI and machine learning can just develop a pattern where they sort of water feed and harvest it. You don't need farmers anymore. So, you know, it does seem, you know, that no business is exempt or has a special work that it does, that AI couldn't potentially enhance or affect in some way or the other. And that's quite a challenge, isn't it, Christian?
I don't see it as a challenge. I mean, look, the advancements in technology, they have always been here, right? I mean, farming was in the, I don't know, around 1900, 98% of the people in the US were in farming, right? Because lots of the work was done manually, I mean, really with horses and so on. And when then the cars and track and other machines came up, you know, that amount of people were reduced, because you could do the same amount of, you could generate the same productivity, but with less people, but supported by machines. But on the other hand, a machine industry came up, somebody had to produce those machines. So the technical advancements, they're always there. And I'm very grateful that they are there, right? Because of that, I can also benefit of it, right? I mean, of course, if pharmacy becomes better in drug development, if we start to understand things which we couldn't understand before, that's also helping me, right? The challenge that we are facing is that people need to stay up to date, need to understand what's going on. Not that in a way that they are scared, but they can also prepare what is change and what's going on, right? So that means a lot of upskilling, a lot of education is needed, that people understand what could happen to me, what could happen to my profession or to where I work or to my living, to my kids. I think that is where we need to keep an eye on. And of course, I mean, AI can do many things. always when AI is in the hands, in the wrong hands, right? Of course, yeah. you can harm people, right? But that is something you can do with everything, right? Mm-hmm. With many things, you can use a weapon to defend, but you can also use a weapon to attack. There is no difference here.
Absolutely. And I was reading the Swiss Re reports, they're producing regular reports now on this and how insurers are coping with AI. And it's been fascinating to see the rise in claims against both known and unknown cyber risk. And even now they're starting to talk about claims against quantum computing or protecting, getting some policy wording around quantum physics, because someone somewhere is going to achieve quantum supremacy. And then that's another game changer. I mean, these things are all happening very, very quickly with terms that even 4 or 5 years ago, the average sort of financial advisor or insurance broker, they just weren't talking about these things, were they?
True. In all transparency, people were talking now for many years about a couple of topics. If you remember, that started somewhere in 2014, I believe. People started to talk about big data. They talked about digital. Then they talked about AI, later about crypto and smart contracts, and then about quantum. So these are the technology topics which are around, always with what could happen now, what could happen in 5 to 10 years from now. Mm. The big difference is AI is real and AI is here to use, right? I still see difference from the use of AI to the use of quantum computing and smart contracts. For quantum computing, I believe we still have a few years ahead of us until such system really become, let's say, usable in a productive environment to solve certain things. I think we are still a little bit away from that, maybe 5, maybe 10 years. But AI is here. AI is real, and we can see the impact and the use already, not only since now, since many years already, right? Since over 20 years. With generative AI, it became again more clear to everybody how things could change and support us.
Absolutely. And let's narrow it down then to insurance. We've already seen insurers use AI in motor claims and underwriting, and in sort of systems and processes. We've seen them use AI to kind of understand the data that they've got on customers to enhance the customer journey. What more could insurers do, and how can perhaps people learn, smaller companies learn from some of the examples being set by these big companies and how they've tackled that problem using AI, using data, and applied it in a practical way that supports customers?
Yeah. I mean, from an outside-in point of view, insurance, what would you expect as a customer from an insurance company, right? Ideally, if they contact you and they want to sell your product, you would like to understand this product, because often that starts with a very technical language, specialist language, but you as a customer, you don't speak that language. You don't understand everything. Maybe you understand it in motor, but it looks different if this is about life and this is about pension, right? So it starts with the complexity of the language. It then continues that with a policy, you try to package something which is coming from a rule-based world, but you're packaging that in a policy which is written in natural language, right? And then later, when you as a customer, you have a claim and you would like to go back to your company and get a notification of that claim, it's the same. You try to describe something which happens in the real world, which is unstructured, and you try to bring that to word, and the insurance company is trying to link that back to a rule-based system. And that by itself, you know, from a pure customer point of view, offers plenty of AI opportunities along this whole journey to facilitate this interaction between the customer and the insurance company. Because the insurance company is something you don't want to see as a customer the whole year. You want to have coverage. You want to buy risk mitigation, but hopefully nothing happens. And if something happens, then you just want to issue your claim. And the next thing you expect that you have the payment on your bank account within the next days without giving without spending too much time. And in there, this whole value chain that you started to explain. So from the underwriting process to explaining products better to customers, upskilling our agents with such tools, but then also the whole claims handling and being there with the technologies where our customers are, that offers a wide variety of AI all over the place.
No, that's really helpful. And can I also build on that? You know, what is Zurich doing in terms of using AI to understand developments in the world at large? You know, obviously in life and protection, you have medical advancements and new papers coming out almost every day across the world, which could change the way in which policies cover certain conditions, or which conditions that were no longer that used to be terminal and now no longer terminal, or which had a short lifespan after diagnosis now have a shorter lifespan after diagnosis. And it's always relied on human beings to kind of read these, understand these, and then put these into a policy document. Are these the sort of things that Zurich is looking at to improve on policy wordings and make policies more robust and up to date?
That's a very good example that you bring in, the life example, because it's also a perfect example to explain the whole advantages that, for instance, now, like GPT, the large language models bring in. So not only GPT, but also the others, right? Meta and Anthropic, all of them. The med space and the health space has been, over the past years, always an area where a lot of scientific publications came out, a lot of research was going on. But in essence, nobody had the time to read everything and to understand everything. And exactly with those large language models technologies, you have now for the first time a much better tool than before. I mean, NLP, natural language processing, was there before. But with the large language model, you have now a new capability to understand bring the understanding of those publications together, even cross languages, no matter whether that was written in English, German or French. That is something which is unique and new, right? And of course, from an insurance point of view, we look at these things, right? We look at these things. How can we better understand what's currently going on in this health space? How can we bring this knowledge together? And as a result, how in the underwriting process can we, by the end of the day, improve how we issue policy and how we give protection to our customers?
And how does your system operate to filter out what could be false documents? There was a case a couple of years ago where some people had written a fake medical document about COVID and produced all the, you know, used it, couched in very scientific language, made it look like it was a peer-reviewed document. And it was being passed around the internet and accepted as kind of gospel truth, when in fact it was the brainchild of a few keyboard warriors. How does the systems, and how can the systems, or should the systems, interpret all this data that's coming and then say, well, actually, we think this is fake and this isn't? Because if you include something that's fake into your system, that could significantly throw all the work that you guys have been doing to make things fairer and simpler and better for the consumer.
Yeah, sure. The fake information, or information that is not real, even in scientific publications, they were always there all over the years, right? They're always there because many of the universities, they have a certain pressure to issue new papers and they're right. So that was always there with AI and without AI, right? All over the world, including the news. And of course, already in the past, people had to identify, can I rely on that source? Is this information right? Or do I need to check a second source or third source? Mm-hmm. Here, there is no difference. What I do know, and where I'm a strong believer, is that together, the human and the machine will be better as a team to identify false information. As either would do alone, right? I cannot let the AI go alone and take decisions whether that is right information or not. So I need the human in the loop, and vice versa. I believe the human is better supported with the machine. I'm a true believer that all those safety measures that we need to take care of, and one of them is the false information, needs to be embedded in the design of the systems, right? So I'm a true believer following that path also with my teams.
So is AI then working in the place of humans? Is AI working as a human, replacing a human, or is AI working for a human?
It's for me, as I said, it's a supportive tool. And when we look, it's the third one that you mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. AI is working for a human. Let's take the last example you brought, underwriting. Mm-hmm. Be sure that we have the right policy wording also to be in a way fair to our customers and to cover the risks that we need to cover. And here the human and the AI together can achieve better results. AI can support the human in doing some groundwork in looking at inconsistencies in the wording, things which would contradict, right? But it's still the underwriter who needs to take a decision and who is basically the one who is taking ultimate responsibility, what we basically put into the policy. And that is along the whole journey. So in all of my areas where I'm involved from an AI point of view, it's never about the human to replace a human. That's never the question, right? The question is always, how can AI help our people in underwriting, in claims processing, but also in the back office to become better, more efficient, but also more effective in what they do?
Excellent. Thank you very much for that. Just talking about the sort of innovation and going back to the point we made earlier about the pace of innovation, can businesses afford to be tardy to this party? I mean, is it still important to be cautious and take things slowly, or simply is technology accelerating at such a pace that anyone slow to use AI is actually going to be very far behind?
Look, I cannot speak for the businesses, right? But we take this very serious, right? I mean, when this came out last year, I mean in November 2022, but when that became for us effective starting last year, we took everything to accelerate in that space, right? And acceleration means understanding technology, understanding the risks, preparing an environment where we can make use of that technology, but in a safe and in a protected way. So we really did everything and we are doing everything to keep the pace and to run this race, right? Because we believe that is going to, as I said, AI is real, and this is going to impact our whole value chain and the insurance sector, right? We are in an industry sector where a word makes a difference, whether that word is in the policy or not, whether I contradict myself in the claim or not, everything is making a difference. So now you have a powerful tool, and many companies start to use that. Many companies will use that to make the customer journey even easier, even more seamless, right? This is why we take this very serious and we put lots of efforts into that. My advice would be to others to follow and to do similar things. I would not let it go, right?
Absolutely. I like that. Do not let it go. So what might the future of insurance look like in an AI-driven world, for all the advisors out there who you've got clients with policies? What might the future of insurance look like? How can they kind of describe that to their clients?
Let me maybe rephrase the question a little bit, right? I believe not AI is going to influence the future of insurance, but as such, how does insurance look in the future? We believe, if you look at traditional insurance companies like Zurich and all others, right, we all always have to believe if you need insurance, you come to us. And then whether that is household, motor or life, you have a discussion with us. We believe in the future, as it already started, it will be significantly different, right? We call that the embedded insurance, that you basically get insurance at the place where you buy something, right? So the embedded insurance, whether you talk with your bank, whether you buy something at IKEA or something, an electronic device, all over the place, insurance policies will be offered to customers as a protection for what they have bought, right? And we know we need to be there, right? We need to be there where our business partners are. And with AI, but not only with AI, also with other technologies like the cloud or being really connected through what we call API, so really being connected and in the cloud, offer us important pillars to follow this move of the insurance industry and be there where we expect to be. And AI is just one of the pillars, but also AI will make a difference for the customer in the future at the point of sales.
So say I'm a broker, I've got a client in front of me, I've gone through the fact find with them, I've got to know the client. Could I then technically, this is a perfect world, get on to my insurer's website, put through all the details, get an answer within 15 minutes, and then the policy is sitting there in the client's inbox ready? All kind of accelerated by AI.
asset for certain insurance coverages you can that do already, right? I mean, let's say like motor, right? Getting a motor insurance is today a very, very fast process. Of course, if you are multinational and you would like to have protection of your property around the world, that's different, right? That takes way longer to get insurance over complex things or a machinery breakdown or other things.
But then health often results in, sorry to cut across you there, Dr. Christian, but, you know, life and health, you know, you have to add in third parties like GPs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
That depends what we call per line of business, per things you need where you need insurance. Even I as a person, if I would need life insurance or think about my pension fund or health, I don't want that to be done in 15 minutes, right? I would like to have a good discussion with someone, with a person who explains me the whole background, what I need to know, right? I mean, I hope that AI is supporting that person who talks with me, but I still would like to talk with a person. But coming back to what you asked before, as I said, the embedded insurance is a different picture, right? Mm. That means you are buying something somewhere, and at that point of time, you just believe, you just want additional coverage, right? You don't want to deal with your insurance company as such. You don't want to retype things. Mm. At that point, you expect that either you take the additional protection or not, right? And if you take it, it should be done in a very seamless way, right? The same when you then go back a few months later and you want to raise a claim.
Yeah, you only want to enter that information once. You don't want to keep doing it.
Mm. Yes. And as I said, coming back to AI, yes, AI will help. Coming back, for instance, to the large language models, they can capture better, you know, your needs, how you express them, how you put that into words. We have now technologies which help to extract that. But also other AI techniques which have been around there for years will support in those processes to get things done just faster.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Christian. We've actually come to the end of the podcast, and I hope this has been as intriguing and informative to listeners as it has been to me. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us virtually all the way from Switzerland. And thank you all for listening. Until next time, take care.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.